Hello and welcome to Enlighten My Loafers. I'm your host, Brett White, and I'm a TV critic for Decider.com, but this podcast has very little to do with TV, except all the times I talk about Daredevil and Match Game in this episode. Okay, let me back up. I've lived in New York City for over 13 years, and somehow it took me until summer 2019 to finally pay a visit to a local vintage clothing shop. I discovered Fine and Dandy through the magic of the Instagram algorithm, and lordy was I missing out all that time. Fine and Dandy is nestled in Hell's Kitchen. It's a time capsule of a shop and a part of Manhattan that feels like old New York. Stepping into Fine and Dandy, it feels like taking a trip through time, but it's a trip that stops through every single decade of the 20th century, and then it just keeps going to the 21st century, thanks to all the new designs coming out from the men behind Fine and Dandy. This week, I welcome Matt Fox and Enrique Crime III, the founders and curators of the entire Fine and Dandy world, a world that exists in the same neighborhood protected by Daredevil. See the connection? Matt and Enrique welcomed me into their shop to talk about Fine and Dandy's origin, the questions they get from the most curious customers, how menswear is evolving into a style everyone along the gender spectrum can enjoy, and also the return of the ascot and neckerchief. Charles Nelson Reilly would be proud. And there's the Match Game connection. Let's go! You wear it well. Lipstick painted on. You wear it well. You sure suits you.
My name is Enrique Crime III.
And I'm Matt Fox, and this is Fine and Dandy.
Hello, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hello.
So, Fine and Dandy shop is in Hell's Kitchen.
That's
does
great.
Hell's Kitchen, yep. Is it still called Hell's Kitchen, or have they come up with like a trendy modern name for it?
Real estate developers, maybe 10, 15 years ago, tried to rename it Clinton, but it didn't really quite work. And I think we've reclaimed the name Hell's Kitchen. Hell's Kitchen is just cool sounding.
Well, I mean, like, so coming from my comic book background, Daredevil is one of my favorite characters of all time, and he is synonymous with Hell's Kitchen, so I have to imagine the Netflix show really just refreshed Hell's Kitchen in everyone's mind.
Probably, although when we watched it, it was obvious that nothing was filmed.
No,
here,
it's all, they didn't even it's try all Long Island City.
They didn't even try, you know, which was fine.
Also, like, the thing I also being a gay Daredevil fan, I'm just like, Hell's Kitchen's very gay now, so I really wish that there was more, like, gay bars stuff on that Netflix version.
I mean, if anything, we get actually, tourists walking around outside and asking, where's Hell's Kitchen? Thinking, you know, where the restaurant is.
People look at thinking of the restaurant.
Oh, wow.
More than anything, really, yeah.
It's like, where does Gordon Ramsay live?
Wrong state.
Unofficial mayor of Hell's Kitchen. So what is the origin of the Fine and Dandy shop? It's been around, it was started as an online store?
So we started online in 2008. Enrique and I both had other careers, and we're just kind of looking for a side sort of creative thing to do. And,
I think it was really like a road trip in Cali, right? When the idea really.
We were driving down the coast of California and, you know, being inspired by the beautiful sights. And, 2008 was, I think 2008 was kind of an interesting time in that, menswear online just kind of exploded.
Yeah.
There were so many, so many blogs and,
it's like Tumblr started around 2008, Twitter, right? Like 2008 to me is like the Twitter year. Cause that's like when I got on. I mean,
also that big recession.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the beginning of the recession. Exactly. But so we had the idea of let's try something that's online. We were going to be working out of our apartment. We had the idea, let's try accessories.
Something small, you don't have to take up too much space, and also no sizes, right?
Exactly.
That was very important.
Yeah, so one size fits all with a necktie.
We didn't want to do any returns or exchanges, shipping back and forth. So
we did a returns exchanges, but we didn't want to do that because of a size
sizing.
Issue.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. 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 So we said, okay, let's go to this trade show and just kind of like walk the show and get a sense of what vendors were out there.
That was like crazy because we were just blind, right? We had no idea what we were doing.
We just like, what we were doing.
And do we apply? How do you, like, anybody can just go to this?
And was
shows?
The intent to start designing your own and actually like hand making them, or like to start, like, I don't know, how does that process?
It started out more as a shop.
Yeah.
And then,
the idea was like, we want to have a shop where the stuff that we love, really, okay. It was that simple. It was
like, you guys would like curate, exactly. These are all things we like. Right. It's going to be a centralized location.
Like stuff that we like, there's a lot of stores happening there, but sometimes you can't find what you really want, you want for yourself. And at the same time, we were very big on like the value and how things were costing, and we wanted something affordable.
For several years, we didn't sell anything over $50.
Yes. Oh, that was a big thing that, and I think was why we got a lot of press as well. Sort of like, look at this shop that's like doing this. Like,
Ties made in New York City for $49.
Yeah. That's a big deal. now trying to get into, dressing better and like experimenting with like nicer brands and stuff. It's like, I don't know, like I like Drake's, and then I go there and there's like a necktie I want. And it's like $200. And I'm like, I know this is like, probably it's like handmade in London or something. Yeah. So it's like also like shipping it here is a lot and stuff. And
they have a great store.
And
in
it's
Soho,
like, it's great.
Made out of Soho, so that's a big rent.
So it's like, I see where the money is going. Yeah. I understand why it costs that much, but also I can't spend that. Yeah. Not yet at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a really cool, impetus to get started, 11 years ago.
Right. Yeah, and
feels like a lifetime ago.
The shows were, we were excited to walk the shows, still smiling and, bopping around, and then we'd meet like vendors and sort of like, who are these two young, folks?
Well, and keep in mind also 2008, it was kind of the beginning of e-commerce to some degree as well. So many vendors when they'd ask who we were and we explained that we were starting something that didn't exist yet, and it wasn't an actual brick and mortar store, it was an online store.
Right. Yeah.
And many brands wanted to have nothing to do with us.
Yeah. I don't think they understood what we wanted to do, right? Or what it's like, are you crazy? Why are you going online? Like,
yeah. And that's almost all it is like things, most everything starts out online. So you guys kind of do like the reverse of like, you start online, then you got a shop.
Right.
Totally.
Which, just kind of worked out that way, but definitely worked to our advantage because we were able to kind of build our brand in a way that was, minimal financial risk.
But also building the customer base from all over
absolutely.
The world.
Oh, right.
Like,
yeah.
Amazing.
So when we opened here, people knew our brand and, we had customers and
it was like their first stop. New York, I'm finally, going to come to your store.
Yeah.
It's very exciting for them.
I mean, if you live internationally or even not in New York City, as far as you guys have always had a store.
Right.
And so then you finally are making the dream come true of like, oh, there actually is a store.
Yeah.
And there was a 4-year, the shop opened in 2012?
So online in 2008, 2010, we started doing pop-up shops.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which was great because that was our first experience of having real interactions face to face with customers, and it was just a different thing. I mean, as I always say, as much as people shop online now, I think there's something to be said for touching the product, having a conversation, trying it on, having a real experience, and we did. The pop-up shops were very successful right from the very beginning.
It was hard work. I mean, first,
oh my gosh,
auditioning for Brooklyn Flea, that you had to be approved, you had to apply and approve. Jeez. So we finally got there.
But we would do these one-day Brooklyn Flea setups.
Because we would take the weekend off. Well, you always have the weekend off, but I would take the weekend off in retail, so it was very important for us to
It's like double duty. It's a lot of work.
But we would, we would, pack for the Brooklyn Flea, but we wouldn't take a car service because, that we wanted to maximize potential profits.
Yeah.
And, a car back and forth to Brooklyn, we would only possibly make this certain amount. So we were lugging these heavy backpacks and the signs and whatnot schlepping it to Brooklyn. And it was a lot. And I remember the last time we did it, 2011, I believe. And we'd done it over the summer and it was into the fall and, people were packing up. It was 4:30. The vendors were starting to pack up and we're like, why is everybody packing up so early? And all of a sudden we realized when it became pitch dark in moments. And we were trying to pack up in the dark with our phones. And we had a moment where we were like, hey, we're going to laugh at this someday. That
right. Because, I mean, a lot of those people, that's their full time. You know, yeah. They go every week and it's a thing and, you know, they have it down to a science and here we are.
You learned. That's how they learned at some point. That's how y'all learn. And now you don't really have to. Do y'all still do pop-up shops every now and then or just like, this is enough? This is a lot?
We've done where it's like a customer going through their corporate office. So we've done that for their, you know, holiday shopping. So we've done a couple of those.
Very targeted.
So, and we don't seek them. Like, they would ask us and try to work it out in our schedule.
We've had a couple of new high-rise buildings in the neighborhood that... Their marketing people are trying to kind of sell people on the neighborhood. Mm. So they'll ask us to come to kind of put together a little pop-up shop.
Oh, wow.
It's been great. We've done a couple of times you know, we get to invite all of our customers and friends and it was a good time.
Wow.
Just another way to, you know, be out there.
Well, also, so when you were coming up with first of all, how did the name Fine and Dandy come about?
I think it's as simple as long before we even really were serious about starting this, we were shopping one day and we were talking about the dandy, and one of us said Fine and Dandy, and we're like, oh my god, what a great name for a shop.
Yeah.
And I can't even pinpoint.
I don't know where we were when.
Yeah.
So that was kind of in the back of our minds.
But also we've been collecting a lot of old photos, right? And just that whole era of like, you know, people care better and look, you know, made an effort and dressing and how cool. Like your grandfather was a big, you know, inspiration as well.
Oh.
You know, as a farmer with this, you know, with his cows and like stark white suit, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of us, they say it kind of skips a generation to some degree that, our grandfathers, you dressed up even if you were, you know, you weren't going to the office, you know. So I have photos of my grandfather who was a farmer and he was always so nicely dressed.
Wow.
Like, you'd think a farmer would get so dirty. You wouldn't want to be wearing like a white suit, you know. No, but in then, this like, photo
Colonel Sanders always wore a white suit, right?
But we've heard the theory that our fathers feel like they earned the right not to have to dress up.
Yeah.
So then for our generation, it's sort of a new and exciting thing to put a little effort in and to dress well.
I never heard that, and it doesn't actually map. I don't know if I've talked on the podcast about my grandfather's style, which when I was in high school, I inherited his entire collection of like 70s leisure suits, which again, like,
okay.
Like they're a different, it's not like a nice thing, but it's still like he made choices.
Yes. Right.
And like, because so my grandparents were like gospel. They were like a gospel singing duo.
Oh,
amazing. Like not really like professional, but they would like tour like churches and stuff, I think. And so like he had reasons to dress up, and like it was like weird, like, you know, like not neon, like a powder blue, like a lime, burgundy, amazing. Just like the frilly shirts and just all that stuff.
Dickies.
And
it's
just, it's like well, wild.
hang on to them because 70s is. Trend is
coming. I mean that's I kind of wish I don't know where they all went to, but I would wear them in high school on like costume day, but also like now how I dress is not like that, but it's like I don't know, I flirt with it
not full on.
No, yeah, but like my dad is like t-shirt khakis, like it's like doesn't do anything more complicated than like a polo at times.
Yeah,
so that is, I never heard that before, but it does really does track
well. And we hear so many, you know, men, you know, who come to the store with their wives or whatever, who are, you know, let's say they're like, you know, in their early 60s, and they're like, oh, I don't, thank goodness I don't have to wear a tie to the office anymore. So that's, it definitely is that attitude.
Yeah.
Whereas their sons maybe are a little more into it.
But also when we started during recession era, you know, people had to kind of dress up. To kind of like keep their jobs and not be like fired or laid off, you know, they have to be the better one, but without spending, you know, a new suit.
Our theory was that when the recession hit, part of the revival of menswear was having to dress better.
Oh, wow!
To stand out.
Yeah.
So if you had a job in 2008, and people were being laid off, you know, you had to do everything you could to.
Well, there is like you're projecting a level of professionalism, even if like, and even if you're no more professional than like the person next to you in like cargo shorts and a t-shirt,
yeah,
you're still like somehow coming to work every day with like a necktie, and people are, I don't know, to continue to notice that.
Yeah. You gotta be, look better so that you get to be, you know, to stick around.
As, you know, dress for the job you want. I dress for being a contestant on Match Game in the 70s most of the time. So
you have it down.
Yeah, and I was on Match Game, so that's a tangent. I was a contestant on the ABC Match Game earlier this year.
Yeah, amazing.
Neither here nor there, but I just realized that I fulfilled a dream. So what would you say is the, like, what is the customer that you attract, like, the most into the shop?
It's, our customer base is very, very diverse.
It seems, I mean, like, just, it does seem like it would be, just because the range of stuff in here is so wide.
Age-wise, we have this little four-year-old boy who's obsessed with wearing bow ties, and wears bow ties every day. And then we have, going up to, you know, 90-year-old men, very conservative dressers to hipstery sort of. So it's all over the place. So it's less of like who our customer is and more of, who would wear these types of things.
Yeah. And so like, that's another thing that, that I try to unpack in my brain as I don't know, I'm a thinker. I mean, I don't know, I get paid to think and write about TV for a living. So I guess it makes sense. So, the perception of the kind of people that would want to wear a lot of this stuff doesn't, I like that you said that it is a, like a diverse, like young and old, because you get the idea of like the young Republican or like the snooty, or, you know, there's a, like a, there's an uptightness or like a conservatism that I'm not like that. I don't know. I like wearing ascots and like bow ties and stuff, but I would not consider myself like stodgy or old fashioned.
So the story that I always love to tell is that the first year that we opened, this older man walked in. He's probably in his 70s. And I think he was from the South. And, you know, very, very conservatively dressed, like beautifully dressed. And he said, oh, my gosh, I've been waiting for a place like you to open since all these other stores have closed over the years. And 2 hours later, this guy and this woman walked in, a couple, and they were kind of looking around, and they were all like goth looking. And the woman turned to the guy and said, honey, you finally found your store. And I just thought it was just so bizarre that it, like, within an hour or two, these two different, very, very, very different people identified so much with what we were. And I just thought it was just this bizarre thing.
Did y'all expect that when you opened? Like,
No. Not at all. But I think part of it, I think, is that, you know, people come to our shop and it's like, oh, what kind of a era are you trying to present? And really,
we get that asked all the time.
Yeah.
But we've never really thought about that. It's just like putting everything that we love all together in one and kind of have it make sense.
Yeah.
That's really like, there's not one particular period. You can have a 20s. There's a whole collegiate Ivy style there in that corner. There's, you know, a 30s, a gas. Somebody come going for a Gatsby party, we can dress you up, or somebody.
But then you also have like pillow stuffed animals, or like dolls of like Popeye, pop culture icons. Like, so like, so it's super cool,
right? And we didn't actually start that way.
Trying
to
keep you guessing.
Yeah.
When we opened a retail store, it was very important to have something for everybody that comes in with their kids and strollers, and you know, we'll help them come down the two steps with strollers, or have something for their dog. So we have like the dog collars and leashes that match the belt. So we made sure there's something for everybody, you know, so that was on purpose. So
that's very smart. And also I like, so also like learning more about menswear and like trying to get into it. I see a lot of people on Instagram, like trying to reach for the, you know, perfect Ivy style, like as if they are. And I don't know, I don't mean to like throw shade at people that I guess definitely know more than I do about this kind of stuff, because I don't know what perfect Ivy style is. But also, I don't, in my head, I don't think of ever starting a day of like, I want to be head to toe this one particular era thing.
Yeah.
So I like that the store, the way you've curated it, is kind of just like everything.
Yeah, it's just putting together your best self and being creative in how you present yourself to the world. And if you know, a woman today, you know, asked me, do you own a pair of jeans? And I said, of course I wear a pair of jeans. I said, many days my uniform is a tweed blazer, button-down shirt, a bow tie, pocket square, and a nice pair of jeans.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I, you know, the high-low of that, I think, is kind of makes it fun and interesting. And, you know, that's what makes dressing kind of fun, is putting it together and putting something together that might be a little unexpected.
Yeah.
You mentioned how on Instagram there's so many people trying to have the perfect things. I think it's actually less and less now than before, when there were a lot of blogs back then, you know, made in the USA, America made only.
Yeah.
I feel like that was the high point, I think, you know, the hashtag menswear.
Yeah.
This was like, what, 2010 maybe? And I think it's now less and less. Everybody's a little bit more free of like being in the individual style. And that's why, you know, fashion is so crazy right now. It could be anything you want. And, you know, you come from that one side of the spectrum to now it's like anything goes, and maybe why we're kind of busier. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, like, are you seeing that?
Sorry.
Are you seeing that? I mean, is there a resurgence in more classic style, like menswear and accessories? Like, have you seen, like, how has it changed over the course of, you know, 11 years going from online to now?
So I think that, I mean, definitely there was a resurgence, and the resurgence of the bow ties, and we always say with pop culture, mm-hmm. you know, when with Mad Men we sold a lot of tie yeah. bars, and with you know, Boardwalk Empire, a lot of collar bars, and Gatsby boater hats. You know, I think that like anything like that, you know, there are peaks and valleys, and you know, I think perhaps maybe it's kind of plateaued. But I think in general where we've landed is that guys are making a little bit more of an effort than they did 15 years ago. If that's what has happened, I'm thrilled with that, because
because men can care. It doesn't. Well, it's not a bad thing to care.
I mean, I really do believe that for decades it seemed uncool or even not masculine for men to care what they looked like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is one of the reasons why I've like started the podcast, is to also just like encourage you guys, just like try a little, just like, I don't know, jump out of your comfort zone. What are the like, so are there any like common concerns or common questions that these kind of like, when customers come in and they are like first trying to experiment or like try new things, are there like common questions or concerns that you guys have to like dispel a lot or guide people through?
So the thing that we chuckle about, and this isn't throwing any shade, but so often customers will come in and ask for help putting for a tie and a pocket square, and we're like, of course, and we ask what they're wearing, and they say a navy suit, white shirt, and we kind of chuckle to ourselves, and we say, awesome, that's totally neutral. So probably 99.5% of our ties or bow ties will amazing with a navy suit and a white shirt.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about like the patterns and colors. And
no, but I love that where they're like, oh, I should have brought it with me.
Oh, and then they say, oh, I wish I brought it with me.
Like, I got it. Like, got a visual.
I know clear. Exactly.
I think I know what a navy suit with a white shirt looks like.
Like, maybe there's a pattern, Prince of Wales? Yeah.
No, it's just solid.
I'm like, just got it. Yeah. I think we're good.
Yeah. Well, and then I'm like, so when someone comes to you and they're like, I have a navy suit, white shirt, I don't know what to do, how do you guide them to, and 90% of the stuff, 99% of the stuff here does match that, how do you narrow it down for them? Like, what questions do you ask?
So first thing, what kind of event, what kind of occasion it is, you know, what the group, the customer, or even the venue, or his friends and coworkers, you know, what industry he's in, right?
And a question
is, it outside the season?
A question I often ask is, you know, what types of colors and patterns are you drawn to? Because sometimes, like, it becomes very clear very quickly that, like, they're just going to want a very basic stripe.
Yeah.
Or something very, like, so right. simple and narrow, which is great. And we've got lots of things to choose from. Yeah. But, like, let's move over to stripes. And, like, that's...
It's almost easier sometimes. Is there a color you don't like?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I kind of like, okay, so that's a no. Or a pattern that you don't like. And then you can then go from there.
Let's roll that out immediately.
As long as you can tell when they're kind of like all over the place and say, okay, I'll just let you walk around for a bit and like point out stuff that you're kind of connecting to. Cause like I can go one way or another direction completely. And, you know, maybe a monotone look or a completely wild and festive look and they can be all that. But, you know, I think sometimes it's just good for them to kind of walk around a little bit to kind of feel out what they really want.
Is there a popular, like, what's the most popular color or style of, like, tie or whatever? Is there something, like, you see, like, oh, you're going to want this?
Well, I mean, we sell tons of blue. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes, maybe. we saw a lot of floral patterns for weddings in the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we always were obsessed with just prints and patterns and colors, and they all sell the same. I mean, there's not one particular thing that kind of stands out.
Oh, like a chambray. We know, like, every season we'll do a chambray tie and a bow tie, and we know it's going to sell well.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Just because it's a basic.
Yeah.
You know, that, we'll always have a, if that's almost gone, then we'll have a replacement.
It's not, like, too serious, but, like, it's still...
Yeah. Well, so, like, beyond, like, people going to weddings, because I feel like that's probably, like, the reason that gets you people in here the most, I would imagine.
Yeah, and, like, Broadway theater openings and actors.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, like, what other events do people come in? I don't know, have you ever been stumped, I guess?
Sometimes, no, but it's, like, it's some interesting ones. Like, I'm going to a funeral, you know, my girlfriend's, and so it's just, like, they kind of have no idea any direction, right?
Or I mean, I think it's, we're more stumped when... It's they don't give us anything.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
right.
Like, yeah. Okay, there's we have 300 ties, so you gotta like
work with me here.
We'll start making suggestions, and like there's just not really much feedback.
Yeah, it's like, always the same feedback for every single direction over the next, and it's kind of like you can still go either way.
Yeah.
Well, how does that all speaks to developing your own personal sense of style and like taste, which is a lot of like trial and error.
Yeah.
How long did it take y'all to like land on your current styles, and are they still evolving?
Definitely still evolving.
Yeah.
I mean, Enrique comes from like a fashion, capital F fashion, like
fashion
/ club kid background. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've always kept everything. I remember just having, you know, I still have clothes from like high school days, and I just know when a good piece is like, oh, you know, it's going to be cyclical. I can't throw that away or donate yet. But I definitely have given away or thrown out some good pieces that I shouldn't have, thinking back. But I can't give everything now that I'm in New York City, right?
Yeah. So, yeah.
When I used to be in Canada, maybe.
And I mean, I always joke that I was the weird kid who wore a tie to school, and it wasn't like a Catholic school or anything like that, or I had to. So I always sort of liked the concept of dressing up a little bit. And I remember long before we even considered starting a business, wanting to buy my first bow tie. You know, this is probably, we started 11 years ago, maybe like 15 years ago. And I just sort of loved how festive a bow tie looked. You know?
Yeah.
How it almost, there's like a little wink to it. Don't take me too seriously, like, you know.
We still remember our first bow tie we got from that corner store in Toronto. Right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
My first bow tie.
Yeah, I mean, now I have, like, thousands.
But yeah, I mean, you know, it's constantly evolving. I mean, you know, there are definitely days where we get dressed and it's, like, just trying to, like, get out the door in time and you know, trying to put something together that's somewhat inspirational for when a customer walks through the door, you want them to see us and say, oh, this person cares what they look like.
They make sense in this world.
Exactly.
Like that's a like added pressure to every single day is it fun to have the reason to actually?
It's like a uniform, I guess. It just happens to be what's on top of your dresser or what's on top, you know, and for other people, it's jeans, you know, if they're, I don't know.
That's like the point. So I should have known that I was into all this in college when I was obsessed with what not to wear on TLC.
Oh my gosh, yes. So good.
I remember like I was like working at like the movie theater as like a shift leader or whatever, and I would like make people like, you need to scrub faster because I have to get home by 11 because the rerun comes on.
That should be rebooted. That should be a good.
It's so great.
It's so good.
And I remember them saying like it's an illusion that it takes longer to put on nicer clothes. Mm-hmm. If everything you have in your closet is a nice piece of clothing, it takes you the same, like instead of wearing like a ratty button down shirt that doesn't fit you, get one that does fit you, take the same amount of time to put on.
Yeah.
And so it does seem like you can dress this nice every day or like this much of a look every day if that's just like what you have.
Yeah. You have
like,
so much stuff available that's ready.
Yeah. Right. Well, like, what is the TV aspect? Because I imagine, like, New York City is such, like, a production hub. Like, how often do you have, like...
It's getting more and more.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's something going on, like, two blocks down. Mm-hmm.
The last few years, it's really exploded. Stylists,
new shows,
designers buying from us. And it's kind of fun to have seen that happen because, you know, someone will come in who who's coming in for the first time, who's buying for this show, and, you know, he or she, you know, learned about us from another costume designer. And it's like, you know, that you're creating this new relationship, which hopefully will go on to the next show. And that's, you know, it's become a good part of our business clearly, because, you know,
they'll buy multiples of the same thing.
Yeah, because they have to do multiple days, multiple shoots. Yeah.
Two years ago, I believe this lady was buying for a show that was filming in Calgary. Canada, in Calgary. Yeah. And she was, I mean, she was, they because they knew that they couldn't do any buying in Calgary, or they could do limited buying in Calgary. She was just based here, doing it all here.
Oh.
And she was in several times a week, spending real serious money.
What was it called?
I can forget. But
people really loved it. It's a period piece that it's
Damnation.
Damnation.
I know. Oh, is that like, it's Canadian?
It was filmed in Calgary, actually my hometown, but, it was kind of interesting. Yeah. But no, people really love, it's a short lived, but they love the costuming and how, you know, how great that show was, but it's just not very popular. I guess. Yeah.
So, well, I mean, that mid-century style just keeps coming back. Mm-hmm. I often like the theory that I have is that nostalgia is broken in a way of that we used to be like a 20-year cycle of like in the 70s, you had Happy Days, in the 80s, you had Wonder Years, in the 90s, you had that 70s show. Like, there was always like a 20 year. Mm-hmm. And now it's like there is Maisel, Stranger Things, things set in the 90s, like Goldberg's. Like, it's, or no.
Even Pose.
Pose is like 91. It's just like, it's all over the map. It's just like all eras at all times. Like, there's
What fashion is right now.
Yeah.
You know, and you can mix high, low. You can mix brand name and vintage. And vintage is so big right now.
Yeah.
You know, sustainability. Everybody's the buzzword. So.
I have to talk about my pet subject, which is ascots, as I am wearing one of y'all's now. So I was like, I should dress up for the occasion. How do they happen? Or like you find vintage fabric, correct?
Yes.
And have them made, or how does that?
So what we say is we collect fabrics.
Yeah.
So some of our fabrics are vintage. Some of it, I mean, it comes from all over the place. We just have
markets or travels.
In our basement, we just have bins and bins and bins and bins of fabric.
Yeah.
So that comes from all over the place.
Wow.
And we have, different manufacturers that specialize in different things. So we have one manufacturer that just makes our ties, another manufacturer that makes our bow ties, our ascots, and
scarves.
Our handkerchiefs and our scarves, another manufacturer that makes our spats. So, it's 11 years in business. It's taken us to this point to find these, you know,
makers,
to really do, you know, a lot of legwork to find these different people that still exist in this industry that make things.
And it's a very kind of tight, kind of secretive, you know, world where, you know, we don't share that with other, you know, new owners, for example, new businesses.
We do get like people come in and they try to touch.
Well,
they just ask, and it's like,
you kind of have to keep it. But also because what we've heard is that, you know, so many of these kind of new businesses will come in and have samples, and they'll make samples for them and take their time, you know, for the whole factory, and they don't hear from them. They don't pay.
Yeah,
they made it. And
no.
We don't need, you know, to have that, you know, sending somebody, anybody.
Especially if they're referencing y'all, and then it's like,
you know,
sorry.
And how we, you know, how we met them is through other producers, manufacturers, and that we've had relationships with. That then it's like, okay, now you guys should go see this person.
Yeah.
And so
it's you're not actually like designing the fabrics and stuff, but there is a level of curation that is itself a creative, like, I'm sure you guys see fabrics that you're like, well, that obviously doesn't fit with what we want.
Yeah. And sometimes we would do something and it's like the best thing ever. So we're like, okay, we should do more of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had no idea. That's a surprise. So.
Although I should say we are slowly designing our own fabrics.
Oh,
so that's a bigger endeavor.
So the one of the first one was the hanky, out of our tobacco parts.
So we we produced a pocket square, using artwork from old tobacco cards.
Oh,
and the series was like these guys exercising. But it's like very, I'll show you where you go. But it's
physical culture is I think is what it's called.
It's very sort of retro and cool looking.
But it was funny, it's a cigarette company, you know, telling you how to be physically fit.
I love that. Right. I love that a lot. Well, so how do I get more guys to try Ascots? That's what
I mean, it's happening. I think
it's
probably the best year for Ascots.
Good.
No,
I mean, we often have guys who are in, you know, shopping for a black tie event, and they're like, oh, I have my black bow tie. I'm looking for something different. And we'll often say, well, what about an Ascot? I mean, you know, everyone's going to be wearing a bow tie. Some people will be wearing ties. Not many people are going to be wearing Ascots.
Probably no one else.
It's a new bow tie when bow tie was, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah. So, being a fan of, like, old sitcoms, you watch sitcoms from, like, the 60s and 70s, like, the man comes home from work and he takes off the necktie and he puts on an Ascot, which is also still, like, I don't know how accurate to the times that was.
Well, that's what I think is so interesting about an Ascot, is that it has the dress down thing, like putting on your smoking jacket and your Ascot, but also it can be very formal as well. So that's what's so bizarre about it.
It seems like since it is so uncommon now, like right now I'm wearing like jeans and a sweater and an Ascot, which I feel like in the 60s would be a casual look, but now in 2019, it's like people are like, wait, hold on, you're casual, but then what?
It's the bow tie.
Like, why are you going to like an opera around your neck? And this is being worn casually because it could also do that.
Yeah.
Darn it.
No, it's really cool. I think and that's what's happening. I think people are learning that you can also dress it down. It's not just like super formal.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to add the pin and then be, you know, kind of like weird, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think also that...
like a vampire. Right,
right.
Like,
right.
But that's also part of the fun of wearing classic clothing, but making it your own in a way that makes sense in 2019.
That's definitely true. I also think that the neckerchief is making a comeback.
Well, I mean, Enrique is the master of the neckerchief.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is the same deal of sort of like, you know, having your shirt open a little bit more casual, but also just having something in your neck that will kind of, you know, pull you together, kind of like, I made a little effort, and you know, you feel like you're a little bit dressed up.
It's like tons of neckerchiefs.
Yeah, and it's like sort of
More than Ascot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, more than Ascot. And I think it took a while for a lot of our regular customers, like, okay, yes, I've heard you love that. I'm not ready yet. I'll let you know. And they'll come in, and finally, when they're ready, they'll take, you know, a half hour figuring out which is the first one going to be. And then they'll be back the next day and be like, okay, I got it now. I need a few more.
It's such a, again, Match Game, I love Charles Nelson Reilly, who was always wearing neckerchiefs and ascots throughout all the 70s. So like in high school and college, I always wanted to do that. I did not know I was gay until the end of college, but I still love Charles Nelson Reilly. I should have saw that. But it is like this weird, like working up to it thing, which like at the end of the day, you're just tying a piece of fabric around your neck.
Exactly.
But there is this weird, like, it wasn't until I dressed up as Charles Nelson Reilly for Halloween for like the second time, like 5 years ago, that I was like, oh, I can start incorporating this into my daily wear. I'd already been dating my husband for like 5 years, and then I realized, oh, maybe I should actually make this official. It is this weird, like, when are you ready to make the jump kind of thing. And it's nice that y'all get to be a part of like fostering that, holding people's hands as they...
Yeah.
Make decisions that seem really should be trivial, but are for some reason very fraught.
Yeah. I mean, we've like Jonas, right? He's funny. When we first met him a few years ago, it's like no neckwear, no anything. And then we got him into like maybe a tie or even a bow tie.
I think ties into bow ties and then ascots.
Always like classic, solid, maybe a little stripe, nothing too wild. And now he's like into ascots. Like, so it was kind of cool to have seen him kind of grow.
The journey.
Yeah, the journey.
What a growth. Well, where do you, so you know, like growth, where do you see things like going? What is the progression of, like, I don't know if like menswear on the whole, this is like, and I need y'all to be accurate. I was like, that's a very like lofty, big, wide question. But
I mean, I feel like it's just greater, better than ever. Right? I mean,
the thing about menswear is that it moves at a snail's pace compared to women's wear. So, you know, for women's fashion from one season to the next, it's like so much happens. Whereas men's wear, that's 10 years. So
I feel like it's definitely accelerated. Like it's probably the same now.
Everything in our life.
You know,
our attention spans and everything is just like so fast.
But also, you know, with the whole, gender talk right now. There's a lot more like masculine, feminine, and you can mix and match. And there's, you know, so everybody's kind of a little bit more open
with
dressing up.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's just very creative, I think, which is what's great is there's a lot of options. There's a lot of indie designers. There's a lot of stuff out there. Right. I mean, a lot more competition for us. I think at the end of the day, we just kind of still like stick to what we like, you know, and just put out what stuff that we like and enjoy prints and colors. And, you know, you like it enough, somebody else will love it, you know, and add it to their wardrobe somehow. So anyone, you know, and not just men, which really when we started, it was really targeted for men. You know, our tagline was, you know, accessories for dapper guys.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we grew up in the hashtag menswear in 2008 and blogging. Yeah. And so that was just like our thing then. You know, I think now more and more we're kind of like fizzling that out because it's not just men anymore that are coming and shopping here. So
we definitely have, you know, women who happen to wear fedoras. We have lesbians who like to be dandy. We have trans men. So it's, you know, it's all across the board, which is awesome, you know.
Yeah.
We like to be part of that.
The more, it's also like, you know, if just from a purely like a mercenary standpoint, the more people that you cater to, the more money you're going to make. So like, being nice to people, pays out in the long run to take the worst, motivation to be nice is making money. I don't know. When I say things like that, I'm always like trying to cater to like the people out there that I assume are like just bad people. That I'm like, you can make money if you're nice to people, damn it.
but you'd be surprised. We've heard things like we have a customer who we adore, who is a woman who dresses in menswear, and she's told us these horror stories of she goes into these stores and
luxury stores.
People don't know what to do with her.
Yeah.
And she just like won't go back. And I think it's just about being nice and listening to people and, you know, just doing your best. And I mean, that whole world where I think we're all kind of just figuring it out, but I think it's being open to figuring it out.
Yeah, just be kind.
Be kind.
Right?
It's really simple. Yeah. You know, people have made an effort to, you know, go down two steps into your store. And it's like, what do you need? Be it, you know, obviously they're here for something.
What do you need? What
somebody has made an effort. So like, you want to cater to them.
They sought you out. And so, you know, making a new friend, everyone that works in the door. No. Right. Well, thank you all so much for talking. As to wrap up, I have to ask for part of the challenge segment. Is there a challenge that you would like to issue to me or the listeners? Perhaps about something we've talked about or something totally new to help us get out of our comfort zones or try new things.
I think I was just thinking about, you know, supporting your local businesses. I mean, you know, so for us, you know, we love our neighborhood, Hell's Kitchen, and we've had friends that have since opened up their own shops and on the same street, and we love that sort of community.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's just challenge could be just, you know, having a, you know, taking a day and just discovering what's on your block.
Yeah.
And maybe posting something on Instagram and, you know, giving them a little shout out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, the world of Amazon is, you know, is as much as we love it as consumers, as business owners, Amazon is tough.
And, yeah.
I think that several years ago, one of our favorite restaurants closed. And we were really bummed about it. And someone asked, "Well, did you used to go there a lot?" And I was like, "I really didn't go there as much as I was one of my favorites. I really didn't go there much." And I think that to acknowledge that, really think about what businesses you love, and really try to patronize them, and really try to give them your business. And you know, maybe that means weeding out the ones that you don't love as much. I think that's. That's a good idea.
I mean, there's so much stores closing and our favorite restaurants closing and old-time stores closing, you know, and it's kind of really sad. And then, you know, you hear people like, "Oh, it's too bad. I love that store." But then when was this the last time they were in?
Yeah.
Right.
When did you last go there, girl?
Yeah. Exactly.
Give them your money. Tag on Instagram. And if you don't buy anything, tag them at least. Give the promotion.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, so much, we're so busy in our lives that we have blinders on that, you know, and we're still getting, for example, new customers that live on our block.
When, oh,
guys,
wow.
How long have you guys been open?
It's like 7 years.
So I think it's just, you know, it's just really taking the time. I'm going to go around my block and see what's around me. And maybe this business is there for you.
And that's it for this week's episode of Enlighten My Loafers. Take Enrique and Matt up on that challenge and visit a local business. Share photos of you rising to this challenge with the hashtag ChallengeMyLoafers and tag Enlighten My Loafers on Instagram. That goes for any challenge from any episode, peeps. Thanks again to my guests Enrique Kramer III and Matt Fox. You can follow Fine and Dandy on Instagram at @FineAndDandyShop and shop online at FineAndDandyShop.com. Follow Enlighten My Loafers on Instagram for show notes, style inspiration, and more. And if you have any questions about clothes or style or fashion or me or, you know, whatever, email enlightenmyloafers @gmail.com or just slide into the DMs on Instagram. And if you like what you've heard, please rate and review the show in Apple Podcasts. Enlighten My Loafers is edited by me, produced by Benjamin Regie, photography by Sam Walker, and graphic design by Dylan Phelps. And this week's style inspiration is, of course, Paul F. Tompkins, the patron saint of ascots, and also a dream get for this podcast, please. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I'll be back next week with more questions and more answers. You wear it well. Lipstick, paint it on. You wear it well. Do your suits you. Ooh, ooh.